This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly. 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer. And for that matter, what is the difference between recorded and pre-recorded?
Welcome back to the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTK, the ticket online at WTK.com. It's now time for the MGO Blog Roundtable brought to you by Homeshore Lending. Homeshore Lending is a local company, and you'll work directly with the owner, a Michigan man, Matt Demarest.
We are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, online at WTKA.com. We're live here inside the MDN studio. Sam Webb, Ira Weintraub on the other side of the glass. You know, I think as the MGO Blog Roundtable with Craig Ross with his tinfoil hat, Literally, folks.
He's that when Brian Cook's in the room.
He is literally wearing a tinfoil hat this morning.
I am. I admit it.
He is in the building.
Honestly, I'm surprised that this is the first time this has happened.
We have Brian Cook from MGO Blog across from me. Brian, how are you?
Good.
And then, of course, Ed Fang from the Power Rank. Ed, good morning.
Good morning, Sam.
Think you got that Kansas City Chiefs pick right?
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to give... I don't think I mentioned on the air that I had Kansas City minus -5. So, I mean, I wasn't forceful about it, so I'm not going to take credit.
No, you were, Ed.
I wasn't forceful about it.
Well, you were right. No, you were forceful, and you
was
were
I?
Right. Yeah, and you were right.
I mean, I knew you were wrong, but well, besides that, like...
I still smell a fix or a rat in that game, but... Aside from that, I'm putting my tinfoil back on.
Well, guys, earlier this morning we had Beth Plocky in studio. You know, let's dive right in because we can then flow out of that into you know, more trivial things by comparison. But the decision to hire former USA Gymnastics admin
vice president
Rhonda Fain and hire her and then fire her. Within the span of a few days.
Yeah.
I'm curious, you know, without me offering up my own, you know, opinions, I don't know if you heard Bev this morning, but just your take on that entire chain of events.
Well, obviously a big PR mistake, you know, for the Daily to be the first people who realize Rhonda Fain is at Michigan and for them not to be told, for everybody not to be told, for the regents not to be informed. You know, pretty much the first kind of big, like, whoops of Ward Manuel's tenure at Michigan. And you know, I think it is unfortunate because if you go back and you read her testimony to Congress, like, this is a woman who had been with USA Gymnastics for just over 30 days when she got her first report about Larry Nassar, which she then immediately reported up the chain. She got two more reports. She reported those up the chain. And she has documentation for this. And, you know, she's sitting on a panel with Luana Simon and his name's Steve Penny.
Uh-huh.
And Penny takes the fifth. And both Penny and Luana Simon are there because they've been subpoenaed. But Fain is there of her own will.
Yeah, and she volunteered.
And
yeah.
she's telling her people what happened from her perspective. And then... some months later, there's some red carpet thing for like the Time most 100 most influential people of the year or whatever. And Raisman is there in support of Rachel Denhollander. She says that
Allie Raisman, the gymnast.
Right. Mm-hmm. And she says that, you know, in this intervening time between her report and when Nassar was finally taken off seeing people, he had abused a 30 or 40 more gymnasts. And she, quote, didn't know what Rhonda did or didn't do. And I'm like, okay, like that's... She gets fired shortly after that, and honestly, being fired by USA Gymnastics is probably a feather in anyone's cap at that juncture in time. And so it's been a while. You see that this kind of story is out there and doesn't really have a whole lot of backing. They're still upset. They have a big platform, and it's something that they could have handled better. Whether or not the risk is at all worth it for a non-revenue sport that – can only make bad headlines and has made a couple of bad headlines in the last year is probably would have taken a pass on that too. But I kind of feel like Fain, you know, at least lived up to what she should do. And maybe she didn't go above and beyond, but you know, she wasn't part of the corrupt culture of USA Gymnastics. She hadn't been there for 15 years like Penny had. She seemed to do the things that she was expected to do. And then USA Today Nexus did report it in 5 weeks to the FBI. Penny obfuscated. He's been arrested for tampering with evidence. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what she was going to do that was going to speed up that reporting timeline. Like, right. You can maybe get after the guy every day, but he has a vested interest in not letting this go forward because he's probably going to jail. Mm-hmm. So it's tough to get people to do things that are not in their own interest. And I feel like, you know, there's a little bit of a railroading aspect here because there's a couple of very prominent people who are upset. But, you know, after Fain was fired, you saw a couple of Michigan gymnasts, I think three, come out and say, we're upset about this. Yeah. And maybe you can make the argument that, you know, you're in a room with an athletic director who has control of your scholarships. You don't really have a voice. Like, they're telling you have a voice, but you don't actually really have one. I don't necessarily believe that, but that's an argument that people have made. Under no circumstances are they obligated to get on social media and protest a firing. Right. So I feel like it's likely the team was, in fact, behind this. I feel like this is a person who
I don't think there's any question.
Yeah. I think there's this is a person who's probably a good gymnastics coach and probably got caught up in the exact wrong time to get a USA gymnastic job. And maybe there's some things that she didn't do that she could have done, but if they're sins, they're probably of complacency. You know, she had the same problem that Raisman did. She had faith in USA Gymnastics and its reporting structure. Mm-hmm. So she reports it to the VP like something's going to get done. The VP reports it to the president like something's going to get done. And then eventually it does, but there's this gap. And it's not a gap that any sane organization will tolerate, but USA Gymnastics is not a sane organization. I think it takes longer than a month to realize you are in a deeply insane organization.
Right.
So, you know, PR issues, I don't think the actual move was completely indefensible, but I don't think it was handled right.
Right. I think it's beautifully stated, Mr. Cook. I see you wanted to chime in there.
Yeah, I mean, I was involved in an organization with a similar problem, not exactly the same. I won't go into what I did or whether it made sense, but but once Michigan decided they were gonna hire her, they should have come out with a major announcement, a major press conference, explain why they were doing it, have Rhonda Fain there, available for questions. They should have made this a big deal, as opposed to just sort of hiring her without it, as you would maybe some other hire.
Well, and you should have run it by Raisman. You should have run it by Den Hollander.
Right.
I mean, these people are kind of the face of the Nassar victims.
Right.
And, like, it's possible that, you know, if you talk to them and you can sit in a room, you can get their buy-in.
And that would have been before they did this big press or another. And this is what I complained about last week about the athletic department, a certain lack of transparency that I think is a mistake. And that when you aren't completely transparent, bad things happen.
Well, I think two things. I think number one, I think it's a mistake for a story like this. Mm-hmm. I think it's a mistake to limit it to the athletic department. I think this is a decision of this magnitude goes beyond the athletic department.
It goes
beyond the public relations arm of the athletic department as well. And so, I think it's when you talk about the misstep, I think from a university aspect, I agree with you guys. If you're gonna do it, I think you also beautifully stated, you got to be out front. You got to have a press conference. Right. You got to make a big deal out of it. Right. And that's exactly why I think in retrospect they would say, you know, we shouldn't have done it. Right. Because if that's the only way you can do it,
and it was,
then we can't do that at this point in time with what our program has been through.
But one other point for me is, but once they go to the process of deciding, look, this woman, there's really just not much there or anything there, and she did what she was supposed to do, and we're going to hire her, they should have stayed with her and taken the heat and taking the public relations. So from my point of view, Michigan blew this up one side and down the other.
So you're saying once they hired her, even with the PR mistakes, they should have just stayed with her
because if their vetting of this was good, if their vetting of the process, unless they decide no, we didn't vet it right.
Well, no, I don't think that's it. I think what happened was now you have parts of the governing structure at odds. You have the regent saying, on record, she should go. And you can't.
Which is a new development for the Regents.
Right. You don't, but see, but a topic this, you know, this attention grabbing, there is.
I don't know if the Regents 6 years ago, any of them would have said anything. Because they had like this kind of clubby board where all the decisions were already made and there wasn't really a lot of public statement. And you see Bernstein kind of break in ranks, and both Acker and Brown, the new Regents, came out in support of it. And I think that's a good thing. Like, I think the Regents need to be more public in their involvement with university decisions, especially when they're not consulted. So
right. And so in this particular instance, like I said, yes, they made this decision, but you have a part of the governance saying they don't want it. You don't want that playing out. You know, the discontent or the lack of alignment, you don't want that playing out in the public. It's easier, as unfair as it may be, assuming for the sake of argument, that Ron DeFain has been railroaded here. And clearly they think that because they wouldn't have hired her if they didn't.
Correct.
You know, their 3 months of investigation must have revealed that to them. Even if you believe that that's the case, you know, it's like the needs of many outweigh the needs of the few. That you got to think about the university as a whole as opposed to Ron DeFain individually. As unfair as that is to her, if indeed what they found, what they believe to be true, is indeed true.
Well, she got Trotsky'd.
Here we go. Ed Fang?
Well, I mean, it's interesting to me just how democratic, you know, these decisions have become. I mean, this reminds me of the DJ Durkin situation in Maryland. A lot of people. No, in the sense that the university made a decision, public outcry came out against it, and they went back on that decision. Okay? In that sense. And, you know, I mean, I think 20 years ago, you know, people writing in letters, does that have the same effect? Like, can you do that? Like, is this just a social media era type thing? You know, I mean, I think it's probably good that this kind of things can happen, but can you get public outcry that makes universities do bad decisions as well?
I think it is certainly a cautionary tale in what not to do. It gives you a playbook. Like you just said, Craig, I mean, to me, that's the play. In the social media era, you're right, maybe in the letter writing era, you just do what you do. And
go over
there is no knowledge of the level of discontent or disagreement with the decision. But now there is, and it's immediate. You can see it immediately, and it's available for everyone to see. It's not just them as a, you know, as a university. Oh, we can see all these letters coming in. No, everyone can see how mad everyone else is about this, and it just makes it that much harder to do what you think should be done. I that's why I say, for me, I believe that they turned over every stone on Ron DeFain. I believe they did their due diligence. I believe that the team wanted this. The athletes on that team, some of whom are victims of Larry Nassar, wanted this. So that in and of itself shows that everyone in the gymnastics community isn't in alignment, isn't in agreement on Ron DeFain. If you have any, you know, if you have any degree of certainty, like, you know, she dropped the ball. Well, how can you say that when you got other gymnasts saying, well, we want Ron DeFain. We want Ron DeFain, the coaches. If there was this consensus opinion that she was somehow one of the primary culprits, then you wouldn't have gymnasts saying, we want her. So clearly they did their due diligence here. The problem is, are they in a position to fight this PR battle right now with what they came out of? And like I said, you're 50 miles from freaking Michigan State, man. I mean, you can't divorce yourself from the proximity of it, too, as unfair as that is to Ron DeFain. Because if they're right, Ron DeFain deserves to work. She deserves to work somewhere if what Michigan found in their investigation is indeed true.
She can probably work somewhere that's not a gymnastics team.
Which sucks, man. That's her life.
I know.
If, like I said, I don't know what she did. I don't know what she did or didn't do. I'm just telling you, clearly you have some gymnasts out there that are saying she's getting a raw deal.
Yeah. But you have some that are
saying the opposite. So. Well, are they really, though? Did Ollie Raceman really say the opposite?
Well, when she got hired, both she and Den Hollander were publicly displeased. And I don't know if that's just scorched earth and they know something or they know something.
So that she knows something more than when she said, I don't know what she did right. or didn't do.
So, like, you know, people on Twitter are like, well, she should have gone to the police. It's like, that's not the way
reporting works.
Right. Like, this is like... Like, for one, like, if you are...
Yeah, this is not Mike McQueary witnessing a crime.
Right. This is also something where it's like, the mistake that Rhonda might have made is probably the same one that a lot of people made, is they didn't immediately go to the media. And is it your place to go to the media as someone who is not abused? I don't know. So it's one of those things where if you don't have faith in the reporting structure...
Yeah, at what point do you... the other thing is, you report it to your superior. At what point do you realize your superior... isn't doing what he said he was going to
right.
do.
And it's a murky thing, and some people are going to be satisfied by the fact that her uncontested congressional testimony looks like pretty good to me, which I've read. And some people are going to be like, she didn't tear down the entire structure of the organization to get to the result.
Yeah, if you believe in her, if you believe that she did what she was responsible or she was what she was required to do. She handled her responsibility. I get it. She's like I said it earlier. She's like the Nick Saban of women's gymnastics, man. I mean, she had 3 national titles in a row.
I mean, I think that people underestimate how difficult it is to change the momentum of an institution. Mm-hmm. Like one person screaming in the dark at USA Gymnastics was just going to get fired, as she did, and wasn't actually going to do anything. When Raisman was like, I don't know what Rhonda did or didn't do, and they fired her, that was an opportunity for them to be like, this person is a scapegoat.
Yeah, exactly. Again, well stated. Well yeah, stated, Brian. Jim Harbaugh made some choices here recently when it came to his staff. The only one that caught me by surprise, guys, was Josh Gattis. And now when you hear about how it unfolded, I think you can probably see it's a surprise to everyone. Hell, it was a surprise to Josh Gattis that he got the call. I'm curious what you guys think of that move, what it means for Michigan.
Well, a lot of these guys are in their mid-30s, so they don't have a ton of track record. And Gattis was a wide receiver coach at Penn State, where he did a great job. And then he flips over to Alabama for 1 year, and then is the co-OC, and he's got Tua, and he's got Jerry Jeudy, and he's got all those guys. Mm-hmm. And surprise, they're pretty good at football. So it's like we don't have like a Don Brown kind of track record here, where right. It's like this guy is obviously a dude. but I like that he's young. I like that he was under Joe Moorhead. If there's one guy I want, like as the guy who you might be learning your stuff from, he's high up there on that list. He's obviously under a lot of demand, going to be a good recruiter, and his hashtag is speed in space, which makes sense given what Michigan's brought in this recruiting class.
So tell me if you guys seized upon the things that I did, Craig, because, look, I went into it. First, I came out of last season pointing out some things like, look, they have got to get better at in their short passing game. Michigan, they don't have a quick game. And when you talk about their schematically quick game when it comes to tempo, it's pretty much non-existent. They need to improve upon those things. I didn't expect them to come out and say, we're going to go. I mean, it's not in Jim Harbaugh's DNA to say we're going to be this spread team. But could you come out with some tweaks? And, man, when he said speed and space, when he said 10 personnel, meaning they're going to spread some teams out a bit. At times,
one running back, no tight end.
That to me is for Jim Harbaugh, and he's turning over the offense to him. These to me are with understanding that they weren't going to make huge changes in scheme. These changes, I think, are still for Jim Harbaugh pretty significant, and they could wind up being profound on the field if they come to fruition.
Yeah, if you believe it. I mean. At this point, I think I'm agnostic.
Well, I think Josh Gattis believes it.
Well,
because Josh Gattis everybody at Alabama left. So if Josh Gattis stays at Alabama, he's got to be the offensive coordinator. And maybe he didn't know that everybody was going to leave. Yeah. But like he knew that Loxley was gone. He knew that he was...
Well, Enos was gone already by the time.
I don't think that...
No, Enos was, I think, left a couple days later.
He might have been declared offensive coordinator, though, by the time...
Possible, but he was definitely going to be the guy at Maryland because Loxley is not really an offensive mind. He's a recruiter and a CEO probably.
I mean, how bad was that hire?
He can recruit, and that's a difference for Maryland. But in any case, like, he's a guy who believes that he's going to be the full-time OC, and we're going to see how that works out, but he believes it.
Well, and I hope so, because I think the story we heard about how plays were relayed to the field last year were a little, in my mind, wacky and led to us always fighting the clock. And
well, do you think that's going to change?
Well, I don't know. That's what I'm saying. I'm agnostic.
He thinks it will.
Yeah.
Harbaugh said, I like the idea of him running it meaning the whole offense. Those are Harbaugh's words.
Did he say play calling? Did he say, I'm going to scrap 10 years of how I've called plays?
Well, I don't.
Did he say that explicitly?
I don't necessarily.
He didn't say those words explicitly, but. I mean, it's a logical inference to make. Yeah. When you say, Ira, you were there.
I make the inference because it's very similar to when he said, I'm hiring Don Brown and I'm turning the defense over to Don Brown. He hires Josh Gattis. I like the idea of turning the offense over to him. Well, he's running for him to run it. You know, so I take that based on sitting in the room when he answered the question. That's the inference that I get.
A lot of guys work with these run game coordinators and pass game coordinators. I don't think that Michigan's process is particularly weird. There are definitely multiple guys with play sheets who are putting in their opinions at colleges across the country. Michigan's problem is that they have not had an alternative to that.
Right.
So they don't have okay, we need to go fast. We don't need 40 seconds of people consulting before we get a play call in. We need to go. And having someone capable of that, someone who's played Madden, and Josh Gattis has played Madden, is important. And I that's not a joke.
There's some reality to this.
But it's funny, Brian.
People of Josh Gattis's age have played a lot of football on their computers, and they know various things about clock management that come up again and again and again when you play six games in a day. So. it's not a joke.
Yeah, and Gattis has worked with receivers too, right? So we had the Biletnikoff winner this year, and you know Michigan is a team that could put three guys in the NFL.
Left, Penn State's wide receivers went in a hole. So that's a pretty good sign. So Penn State's receivers, they had Allen Robinson, they had Godwin, they had a bunch of really good receivers, and then he seems to be a major motivating factor.
How does this work out now? You got McElwain is at the San Jose Sharks, right?
Yes.
And you got and you got Pep, who's sort of in limbo. I don't know. Is he getting a demotion? Is he still?
He was never the OC. So what?
Well, I know. I'm with you on this, Ed. I think Pep has taken a bad hit because he's being blamed for things he was never in charge of.
Pep's being shipped out. It appears.
That's what I wonder.
Shipped out how? What do you mean?
Well, he's been interviewing with Maryland, and he's been on the sideline in the NFL. I think Michigan is trying to give him a soft landing like Drevno last year.
So here's my take. I think that he is interviewing for jobs like he did last year, or looking at other possibilities like he did last year. I don't think that the scenario with him. I think he's a different person than Drevno. I think even if it came to fruition that you didn't have the pass game coordinator tag next to his name, I think he'd still stay.
Okay, but that means they've announced that Ben McDaniels is going to be the full-time coach, but they haven't made that official.
They haven't made that official, nor does he have a contract.
Okay. And they're over then, aren't they?
Well, they would be over if they signed him to a contract.
Right.
Yeah. Pep Hamilton has a contract with 2 years and $2.4 million left on it. So
that's benign.
Yeah, so if the only way, if you wanted to make Ben McDaniels receivers coach, the only way to do that, if he didn't just get another job and walk away, is you would have to move him out and eat all that money, which, I mean, they could. There's no signal that they are.
You're going to call Ryan Day, see if he's got a spot?
there's no sign that they are, disillusioned with his quarterback coaching ability or anything like that. Clearly, they want to modify the offense. But as you guys have said, the offense has been layered for some time. You had a run game coordinator. You had a pass game coordinator. You had a third down and or a goal line and short yardage guy.
I don't know.
Now all of those are coming under one
hat. Bringing in a 36-year-old guy to be the sole offensive coordinator while you didn't get that title is a little bit of a...
Oh, I didn't. I'm not suggesting that it's not a, you know, it's not a decrease in responsibility for him.
Yeah.
I'm not suggesting that at all, but I'm just saying it would be a decrease in responsibility across the board, not just him.
Yeah.
Is what I'm saying.
Kind of feels like a bit of a slap in the face.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how meaningful any of these sort of titles
right,
are.
Right, because, like, you know...
I mean,
you know,
are we just rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic?
It's not rearranging deck chairs.
That's Michigan State.
Yeah, all it's right. Not rearranging deck chairs if you got one guy making all... And he's a
I
new,
agree,
and he's a
if
new
that's
guy.
Fact.
And, right, and we'll have to wait to see. I guess my point is, if you're expecting for him to leave... For a job that's not comparable, I guess I'm not expecting that.
Well,
I mean, if he leaves, I think it would be for a job that's comparable.
And you brought in Gattis now, so you don't necessarily need a wide
receivers coach, right? He could be the receivers coach. That would make Pep the quarterback's coach if you didn't add another title to it.
Oh, and they will. I mean, it's just what happens. Like, everybody's like the associate head coach / recruiting coordinator / pass game coordinator / decorating specialist.
There might be some more titles there. So, but essentially, he would be the quarterback's coach if what we heard in the interview, you know, that the operation. Is going to take place on a game to game basis, like Harbaugh suggested. So, you know, we'll see. But to your point, to answer your question, it remains to be seen. If Pep gets another job, it handles itself. If he doesn't get another job, then you know you got some decisions to make if you're Jim Harbaugh.
What, in terms of titles?
Well, you can't. You can only have 10 assistants.
Right. Yeah. Oh, right.
Yeah. So you either you move Ben McDaniels back to analyst. Or if Pep doesn't just leave, then you decide to part ways with him if you're Harbaugh. I tend to believe this is – I don't know what's going to happen. I want to qualify this statement by saying that. I don't know what his thought process is. I don't know what he's going to do. But based on the fact that you got one guy with a contract and one guy without a contract, that would seem to kind of portend a certain direction.
Hire Jerry Burns. For a weekend. No. That's it.
I don't know what that means, and I don't want to know.
All right, wait. Some of the other guys real quick. Campanelli. What did you think of Campanelli?
I have a BC insider, which is a weird thing to say, but they were very enthusiastic about his abilities, and he's going to be in the mix when Adazio is either fired or retires, and so they think the world of him.
I also have a BC insider, as it turns out.
You do. That's right.
And
not anymore, dude.
And
he's a BG insider now.
Yeah. And yes, good hire.
Okay. Craig Ross.
Yeah.
I mean, not Craig Ross. Ed Fain.
Yeah. I don't know.
All right.
I trust Jim Harbaugh.
And then the name that just came, or the hire that was just announced.
Sean Nua.
Yesterday, Sean Nua.
6 years at Navy, 1 year at Arizona State. I don't know. Like, recruiting, he has no track record because he was at Navy, and then he had 1 year under Herm. Okay. We'll see how it goes. I'm sure that he's a personable dude, and in 5 years, he'll be a better coach than Greg Madison.
Yeah, we'll see. Certainly, you got youth. You got youth on your side. He seems to be a guy, you know, former player, Super Bowl champ, that plays... with current players and with and with recruits, you're going to be able to hopefully open up the Polynesian pipeline.
And if he recruits in Hawaii, I know a place where he's welcome to stay.
You're on the wrong island, dude.
What if I got to go to Hawaii to scout some guys?
You can come. You can stay.
He's
too,
on the wrong so island,
Sam.
Ain't no football over there.
Well, not you take not on the flight. Big
How
island.
How easy is
much.
It to get from one island to the...
Pretty easy.
Pretty easy.
You just swim.
30-minute plane flight. 30 minutes.
All right.
So, there you go. You have an invitation.
Michigan basketball, 17-0 guys. You know they continue to get it done. Steamrolling towards the matchup that everyone wants to see with Michigan State. It was so good to see X. So he had like an offensive explosion. That's what a 24-point night
out-of-body experience.
Step back three from Xavier Simpson said, no way, and he hit it.
Well, you know, they were playing a lot of that game, Pete Nance. Who's what, 6'9"?
He's
6'10".
6'10". Yeah, they wanted to stick it to that guy. They thought they were going to get him at one point.
Yeah, and they, and you know.
I thought he did a pretty good job. It's like a weird matchup for him.
It wasn't stupid. It wasn't a stupid play by Don.
Yeah, I was like, I could move his feet. I'd take him on our team. But he can't play any offense, but he's you know, a guy who should probably be redshirting. And you know, I think Simpson was able to just get open because that was their game plan. Because of course, right.
Teskey too.
Yeah, Teskey too, and made him pay, and also broke Derek Pardon's brain. He went from 9 career 3-point attempts to 13 in one game and did not bank any home. So
I don't think he had 9, did he? I think he had 4.
He had 9 career attempts.
Oh, okay. He had 4 in this game.
And after this, one of them was the prayer banked one in the game in December at their place.
Exactly. He put up 4 threes because Teskey's doing it. He's like, I can't do this.
It's a left hand.
Maybe this one.
It's left handed.
I'm sorry. And then Benson put one up too. They had their centers shoot 5 threes because Teskey broke their brains.
Yeah, and by the way, is his name pronounced Derek or Derek?
It's pronounced Derek. He just misspells it.
Okay. There's an extra R in there that I never
I call him Red Squiggle now because I'm like, what is going on? Like, this year I discovered that he has the extraneous R, and it's like, what's going on?
And so
I think Xavier had some extra motivation just because he missed a bunch at Northwestern, put on the bench.
In the post-game press conference, Beilein said that he took it as a personal affront. And if there's one person in college basketball I don't want to affront, it's Xavier Simpson.
Yeah, that's right. Cassius Winston's going to bust his tail in that game. He's going to kill Xavier Simpson. Did you know that? Cassius Winston is going to eat Xavier Simpson's lunch. Xavier Simpson does not have a chance against Cassius Winston.
Let someone say that.
He does not have a chance. He doesn't have a prayer of slowing the Big Ten Player of the Year, Cassius Winston, down. Cassius Winston's going to pop Xavier Simpson for about 30 plus.
Okay.
Mark it down. He's going to hit 30 on
it. We'll all remember it. Incidentally,
I will accept my credit when X gives it to him. I'll take my credit.
Early in the season, I was going to mention this, but I didn't want to jinx him. Teskey went through, I think, the first 5 or 6 games with 0 turnovers, and he now has 8 turnovers on the season. And I think he's number 9 in the country in turnover. Is that right, Brian?
He's number 10 in turnover rate.
So. Turnover rate. And every person lower than him, well, I average their heights. Their average height is 6'2" of the people. And I think there's one guy who's 6'6" in the mix. But it's pretty remarkable to have 8 turnovers after 17 games in the season.
Well, and that turnover rate is actually adjusted for possessions, right?
Right.
So that's like, you know, you're obviously going to have more turnovers if you're a point guard. So,
right.
But even more remarkable.
Go ahead.
Just even more remarkable that the turnover rate's that low.
And so I decided, I said, well, let's look at his steals and blocks compared to his turnovers. I don't know if that's a ratio or anything, something that makes sense, but I just look. Well, he's got 51 blocks and steals and 8 turnovers. So I said, well, what about Ethan Happ? He's considered right now by Ken Pom the best player in the Big Ten. He's got 35 combined blocks and steals.
He also has like 36% usage on offense.
I understand it's different, but he still has 50 turnovers. Yeah. So the ratio is like 0.7 versus, I don't know, 6.84.
So
pretty remarkable.
Get into that game, so do you double Ethan Happ or you play him straight up with Teskey?
You play him straight up because that's what, like, they played Western Kentucky. They lost that game, and Happ was like 9 of 23 from the floor. And if Happ's 9 of 23 against Michigan, they lose. So
I would double him.
Off who?
I would.
I don't care.
I would see if Teskey can. I would see how Teskey does on one first.
I mean, Teskey had some problems with Derek Pardon in the first game. I forget scored on him in the post.
But I loved what he did at least in the first half against Juwan Morgan. And then you come out in the second half. I mean, Juwan Morgan's going to get some. But you also had some foul trouble in there. I think John Teskey has earned the chance to guard him man to man, and you're better off if you can do that. Obviously,
they aren't going
to
double because that's what Wisconsin lost 4-5, and
too.
Happ is not being an efficient player, and he's not being doubled very much. Purdue did a lot because they're playing a freshman center, and they had to. But the other three...
So you don't think they'll double him at all?
No. I mean, you know, Penn State didn't double him, and they have Watkins, and they lost that game, but Happ had a sub-100 rating. So they might double him a little bit because
that's what I mean. Yeah.
Well, they do have a non-shooter out there for 20 minutes a game. Khalil Iverson. So when Iverson's out there, you could see some hedging off of him. But even then, like, Iverson would be open, and he's got like a 36 assist rate. So he's like a point center. I'm willing to live with Ethan Happ shooting 40 shots in this game. If that's what happens, they lose.
You know, I'm willing to see that too, assuming the shots are from the middle of the paint and not the baseline. Happ is really, really good at beating his guy towards the baseline. He's not nearly as effective as when he moves to the middle of the court. So Michigan, Teske has to slightly overplay him towards the baseline, particularly when he's on the right side of the block. You want him to move to his left hand. It's not that he doesn't have a left hand, but it's not nearly as good as his right. And so Michigan needs to force him to the middle. That's number one. Number two is I think it does make sense occasionally to double on him because Happ, even though he's a good passer, will turn the ball over. He's turned it over a lot this year. He's had some 6 or 7 turnover games. And so,
I mean,
you can double him with some impact, but I agree mostly with Brian in that it's not probably the best standard.
I mean, Wisconsin is a team of all shooters. So Trice is just a shooter. He has less than 10% of his attempts at the rim. Last 8 games, he's shooting 32% from 2 because word is out that you need to get up in this guy's face and he can't do anything about it. Mm-hmm. Michigan's 5th in the country at preventing 3-pointers from going up. So, you know, I think that they're going to force a bunch of 2s. They're going to be off
the dribble. What's the kid's name? Number 35?
Davidson.
No, not Brad Davidson. The
Pritzel.
Not Brevin Pritzel. Not the guy off the bench. I'm talking about the forward, the 6'11 guy that was hitting
Nate Reuvers.
Right, yes. Nate Reuvers. Yeah, he's coming along.
Where the heck did he come from? Doggone it.
I mean, he's going to be the center next year. He's a quintessential Wisconsin stretch 5, 9% block rate. So he's like, they're much better with him on the court defensively, even though that he's playing a lot of his minutes at the 4, which is an awkward fit for him. So he's a player. But he's a guy who doesn't have a lot of offensive game outside of 3-pointers right now, and occasionally like he'll get assists at the rim. But this is a team that I think sets up well for the way Michigan's defense plays. I think their strengths on defense play into Wisconsin's weaknesses.
All right, last one for you real quick. We got to be quick. Who wins tonight, Michigan State or Nebraska?
That's at Nebraska.
At Nebraska.
I'm taking Nebraska by 4.
Nebraska by 30.
Oh, Michigan State. Michigan State's been rising in everyone's numbers. They're a 2-point favorite in the markets.
So by 30.
Better than